for argument this morning is the Central States Pension Fund against an unpronounceable initialism. Mr. Getty.
Yes, may it please the court. I'm Richard Getty. I represent the appellants MCRI, LLC, and MCOF. The issue before the court really involves the application of the multi-employer liability, withdrawal liability. Judge Palmer, we believe, erred when she decided the issue that there was common control and that these businesses constituted trades or businesses under the MPPAA. In deciding this case, I think the issue that you have to look at, really two issues. One, and the principal issue is, does this involve the fractionalization, to use Judge Mannion's words in the White case, of a single employer? These entities were set up long ago by the Cappy family, by Mr. Cappy, for the benefit of his family under skilled advice from two of the largest law firms in Kentucky, which is noted in Judge Hayburn's district court opinion in the litigation that ensued down in Kentucky. But they're totally unrelated.
What about MCOF was leasing property to the employer who withdrew, right?
MCOF.
And so we have our cases, Coder and DiTello, that tell us that that's sort of the classic case for fractionalization. You find common control, you treat it as a trade or business, and they're subject to MPPAA liability.
Well, MCOF in reality is a defunct company. I mean, what happened here was that Mr. Cappy in 1999 went into personal bankruptcy. He had a bankruptcy trustee named Wheatley who was locked up in action and could have saved both the Southern Cross business and these other businesses. Now, you know, in terms of...
To go back to my point then, would you concede that MCOF would properly be held liable here?
I would not, because okay. It was a separate entity.
Then address Coder and DiTello.
Well, I think that the case is more akin to White or Fulkerson. The real issue here involves MCRI. It still exists.
Okay, let's not argue about MCOF further then. Tell us about MCRI.
Right. One of the problems that I had with Judge Palmer's decision is that she really didn't look at the uncontroverted evidence. The only evidence in the record was Mr. Cappy's testimony with respect to how these companies were set up or operated. And this is what he said. He said each of these things were kept separate as separate entities for separate business purposes. That's the reason why we didn't have one holding company.
That's why we don't have, the question here isn't piercing the corporate veil. It's a separate standard under the multi-employer pension plan amendments, right?
Yes, I understand okay. that. He went on to say operating companies and holding companies were kept very, very separate. They had separate corporate status. They were separate forms of organization. They had separate tax IDs because those were passive investment kinds of things that had a different source of income. Southern Cross was bought by Mr. Cappy in 1983. I've been physically, when it operated, I was physically on those premises. It had 120 employees. Mr. Cappy knew every one of them. He'd worked with them since 1983, and he did everything he could to save that business. But the bankruptcy trustee in Louisville...
What does any of this have to do with the issue before us?
Well, I think what it deals with, Judge Easterbrook, is that it shows the separate, unrelated nature of these companies. Mr. Cappy, as part
but
of a
that's
state...
That's not the legal standard here. Common control is the legal standard.
Well, I don't think there was common control.
Okay, focus on that.
All right. The two entities were controlled by two separate trusts that were set up as part of the estate planning process. MCOF was owned 51% by MCOF Inc. and 48% by the MLC Family Trust II. Mr. Cappy only owned 1%. MCRI.
Okay, and he controlled the trusts unless we treat them as part of the bankruptcy estate. Now, Judge Lorch in the bankruptcy court and Judge Hayburn both said those assets are part of the bankruptcy estate. And as I read Section 541 of the Bankruptcy Code, that means they were treated as part of the bankruptcy estate from the commencement of the case, which would suggest then they were all part of the bankruptcy estate at the time Southern Cross withdrew.
MCRI and MCOF were not. Only Southern Cross. Only Southern Cross was really...
Family trusts.
Well, the family trust were never... Family trust, that was an after-the-fact determination that was made.
No. I know exactly. I know that. But my point is that under 541, the standard is that those are deemed part of the bankruptcy estate from the commencement of the bankruptcy, which would mean that they're all under common bankruptcy control for these legal purposes.
Well, if you really read Judge Hayburn's, I'd urge you to read the whole opinion.
I have.
Okay. Well, I'm going to quote you some.
I do try to get ready for these things.
I know you do,
and I
do too. So I'm going to read you what he said. He said, even assuming that all of Cappy's actions were for legitimate estate planning purposes, that he engaged highly skilled, qualified counsel, and he took precautions to ensure that adequate assets were set aside to meet all of his outstanding liabilities, the legal result would not change. He still cannot rely on self-settled spendthrift trust provision to shield his assets from his creditors. The trust here, Central States, was never a creditor of Mr. Cappy. He said, it is also worth noting that the court does not find that the trust to be invalid as the bankruptcy court implied. Indeed, the trusts appear entirely valid in certain respects and contexts. For example, Cappy established the trust, at least in part, for the purpose of obtaining preferential tax treatment. The court expresses no opinion regarding the validity of the trust or for this or other valid purposes. The court's opinion is solely limited to the enforceability of the spendthrift provisions of each trust. He also said, at a different part of the opinion, that the court had no opinion with respect to the control issue. He said that...
What I'm looking at is Judge Hayburn's comment at page 27 of his opinion. Even if Cappy were to ultimately prevail on the intent issue at trial, which was what you were talking with us about, his interest in the trust, and thus that would include control over these entities, would nevertheless become part of the bankruptcy's Section 541A estate pursuant to either of the Kentucky statutes. So he's saying that those trusts that had this control are part of the bankruptcy estate, and 541 tells us that's from the very beginning.
Well, he also said the court finds it unnecessary to inquire about the degree of control Cappy exercised.
No, that issue is in front of Judge Pallmeyer. He didn't have to decide that issue.
Well, my point is that is a fiction. The reality of the situation was these companies were operated not to break out one single business. The manufacturing plant in Rock Island, Illinois, was purchased in 1995. It was set up in a trust to provide benefit for Mr. Cappy's wife and children. I mean, this court has twice reined in Central States pension plan or the trust in these kinds of cases. One was the White case, which involved apartments above a garage. The other was the Fulkerson case. These were passive investments where one entity, MCOF, owned a milling facility and rented it to Southern Cross. There's some connection there.
You lose on that issue, at least.
Well,
in my view, so.
But it makes no difference. It's a defunct entity. It doesn't exist anymore. MCRI is all that is at issue in this appeal. It's a manufacturing plant. Frankly, it's a manufacturing plant that has now, Honeywell, which owns Norcross Safety Products, has shut the plant down. It's now a vacant building with vacant land with no rental coming to it at all. I believe that the Teamsters' effort here to impose liability on these separate entities is draconian.
Mr. Getty, you're arguing this as if this were piercing the corporate veil.
Well, I mean, what sense? I mean, let me read you what Judge Mannion said. A law with the sound purpose...
It doesn't make any difference who writes the opinions of the court. They are opinions of the court.
Well, it's an opinion of this court. A law with a sound purpose...
I'm saying...
Pardon me?
it doesn't make any difference who writes the opinions of the court.
Well, the opinion of this court...
personalize our opinions.
I understand that.
Then why do you keep mentioning his name?
Because I thought he wrote a great opinion in White.
You would be well advised to listen to the court.
Well, my point here, Your Honor, is this. As the White court said, as this court said in White, a law with the sound purpose of preventing fractionalization should not be stretched to such an extreme application that would expose a common owner of a completely unrelated personal business to such withdrawal liability. And he pointed out that the White's two apartments did not offend Congress's purpose designed to prevent businesses from shirking their ERISA obligations. This business closed because Southern Cross closed because of a recalcitrant, uncooperative trustee in Louisville. Mr. Cappy or Southern Cross paid $186,000 in liability. They knew other liability was coming. He begged the trustee to do something to keep the business open. I handled the litigation that could have kept Southern Cross open. It didn't happen. And what I'm trying to point out to you is that these were separate businesses, particularly MCRI. What does the manufacturing plant in Rock Island, Illinois, where they make safety boots and boots for the Army, have to do with a lumber business in St. Louis? This is a stretch. This Central States filed against Southern Cross in 2002 and obtained a default judgment because the trustee didn't do anything to protect its interests. 5 years later, they come in here like they belatedly did in the White case. The White case is a gentleman worked for Ford Motor. The minority business end of Ford induces him to go out and buy a truck interest in a trucking company. It fails. And this entity, I mean, sometimes in this case I wondered whether someone read Les Miserables and liked Inspector Javert, because the way they have hounded and pursued this claim, just like they did in White, is draconian. It is not what the statute was designed to impose. And if we want to sit here and invent a fiction so that liability can be imposed on a company that never had anything to do with Southern Cross, then that'll be the result. I've reserved 3 minutes for rebuttal. I'll be happy to answer any other questions you have. But
thank you, Mr. Getty.
All right.
Mr. Lee.
May it please the Court, my name is Charles Lee, and I represent the Appalachians, the Central States Pension Fund, and Howard McDougall. Mr. Getty emphasized several times that MCRI was separate from SCOFF BP, and that because of that separateness, that they should not be held liable. I think the law is very clear at this point that whether the companies are separate or have no economic nexus is largely irrelevant. Basically, what you just look to is, are they under common control? Is there common ownership? And are they a trade or business?
Mr. Lee, how could the property that was in control of the bankruptcy trustee also have been under the control of the debtor? You seem to not want to choose a theory here.
Mm-hmm. Well,
but the court's going to have to choose a theory one way or the other if we were to affirm.
Well, I think our first position is that it's under the control of Mr. Cappy, that he still owns the interests in the companies. Though they might be part of the bankruptcy estate under the code, that he should still be deemed the owner of the interests of the entities. But what's kind of important to remember is that regardless of whether it's Mr. Cappy that's deemed to own it or whether the estate that's deemed to own it or, as defendants argue, the trustee owns it, it's largely irrelevant because someone owned it. It was either Mr. Cappy, the estate, or the trustee. It wasn't broken up into some parts being owned by Mr. Cappy and some parts owned by the estate or the trustee. It was someone owned all of the interests in the three entities. So so clearly common control is established in this matter.
Um,
next part of the analysis goes
Look, I've got a little bit of trouble with you're wanting to straddle all the possibilities. I understand it from a tactical standpoint,
right.
But we've got to try to figure out what the law is on this. And in essence, what kind of an effect bankruptcy as to some entities winds up having on this notion of common control. Before the bankruptcy, clearly you've got common control here.
Right.
The whole point of bankruptcy is that control is supposed to shift to the trustee and the court, unless we've got a debtor in possession, and I gather we didn't have that here.
No.
So it seems to me that your theory has got to take those offshore self-settled spendthrift trusts, if I got that term right, into the bankruptcy estate, as Judge Lorch and Judge Hayburn found, in order to work out the common control.
Right.
And it may be a bit of a legal fiction because it's a decision that isn't made until after the relevant time.
Right. But I think, as you noted, that under the bankruptcy code, those assets that were in the trust were deemed to be part of the estate from the very beginning of the case. In their briefs, and I think you're kind of alluding to this, they mentioned the fact that the management and control of these companies were in the trustee's hands as opposed to Mr. Cappy's. And the regulations on common control don't really address anything about who has management authority or who's making decisions. It is who owns these entities. And here it's clear that it was either Mr. Cappy or the estate. And so the common control either way is established. Going back to your question, I think it's an interesting question as to who should be deemed the owner, whether it should be Mr. Cappy or the estate. But for purposes of writing the opinion, I don't think it's absolutely necessary to tackle that issue. And going back to the issue of whether there has to be some sort of management authority or decision-making authority, the regulations make it clear, the attribution rules, with respect to trusts and spousal attribution, that even if someone doesn't have any decision-making authority with respect to an entity, those shares can be attributed to them. And so even though they're not involved, they're deemed to be owners of these companies. And so then common control can be established. The second part of the analysis is whether they were trades or businesses. As you pointed out, MCOF they were intertwined with SCOF BP.
Yeah, it sounds like that's not going to do you a lot of good, though.
No, it's not, because as Mr. Getty pointed out, they appear to be defunct. So I'm not going to address MCOF too much, but MCRI is a separate entity that leased land at least until most recently, apparently, to a third party. And the analysis of whether they were a trade or business is, I guess, under the Gretzinger standard. At least that's what the courts have applied. And as we pointed out in our briefs, we don't think that this Gretzinger standard, which was established to distinguish activities of an individual, should be applied to a formally recognized company. And as we pointed out in the brief, in Fulkerson, this court indicated that when there is a formally recognized company, that Section 1301 doesn't present any interpretive difficulties. In other words, they are a trade or business. And that's the position that we're arguing today, is that we have MCRI. It was set up as a LLC. Why shouldn't they be treated as an trade or business? They were set up, it was undisputed that they were set up for purposes of generating income or profit, and there is case law that we cite in our briefs from this circuit and tax court cases that say when it's a formally recognized entity, that as long as there is a profit or income motive, that ends the analysis. They're a trade or business. And so we think that the district court erred in applying the Gretzinger standard. But ultimately, the court did
reach the right. If I were a district judge reading Pioneer Ranch, I would do the Gretzinger analysis, even if I didn't think it was necessary. So.
Right, and that's what Judge Palmer did. Is she said, well, you know, there is some support in Fulkerson in these cases that supports our interpretation, but she felt that Pioneer Ranch addressed that issue. And in Pioneer Ranch, there was a limited partnership, and the court did analyze it under the Gretzinger standard. The way we distinguish that is that in Pioneer Ranch, the court did not address or tackle the issue head on. It looked to the district court's opinion and stated that under the clearly erroneous standard, that the court got it right under the Gretzinger standard because the district court applied that. And here, obviously, the court can dodge the issue again.
Restraint.
Excuse me?
It's just called restraint.
Okay.
If we don't reach an issue, we don't need to decide.
Right, exactly. You don't need to address whether the Gretzinger standard applies here because we would argue that under that standard that MCRI was also a trade or business. There's evidence of sufficient activity. They hired professionals. They hired a management company to do all their work, to correspond with the IRS, tenants, and basically make management decisions. We have MCRI electing officers. They have an office, operate under an operating agreement, adopt the actions of their officers. And this case is nothing like Fulkerson or White, as Mr. Getty argued. Fulkerson and White involved individuals leasing property to tenants under triple net leases. I believe that in Fulkerson, there was testimony that the individual said he devoted 5 hours per year on the rental activity. And even in that case, the court stated that that created a factual issue as to whether that was a trade or business. Here we have a management company being retained to do all the work, being paid thousands of dollars per year. And so we think that there is sufficient activity here for that for MCRI to be a trade or business. I don't think I have anything further to present, so if there's any other questions.
Thank you, Mr. Lee.
Thank you.
Anything further, Mr. Getty?
Yes, I reserve 3 minutes. And I don't think I'll take all that time.
We focus both on control and trade or business. If you look at what this court said in White, a trade or business does not include purely personal activities, no matter how continuous or extended the activity may be, nor how profitable. MCRI was totally unrelated to the Southern Cross lumber business. It was established at a different time, well after, in 1995, after the Southern Cross business had been operated for 12 years. I believe under the Gretzinger test and under the White and Fulkerson cases, you can find that this was not a trade or business, that it was a passive investment, and therefore does not fit within the second prong of the test that Judge Palmer had to apply. Is there common control, and is it a trade or business? I believe it is not, and you can decide this case by saying it is not a trade or business. Now, twice before, this trust, pension trust, as shown by cases before this circuit, has a penchant for taking overzealous positions against parties that...
Do you want us to get into that kind of an analysis of both sides of this case?
I simply want this court...
When we look at all these offshore trusts to shelter assets from creditors?
No, Your Honor, I want you to do what's equitable and what's fair here. And
no,
I believe when
I hope what you want us to do is follow the law and not make something up.
I think if you follow the law as set forth in White and Fulkerson, you'll see that this is the kind of case that fits right within that. This law was never designed to apply to MCRI. I mean, this law was designed to prevent businesses to unlawfully and wrongfully break up a single business and put it in chunks in order to avoid their rightful liability under the law. That is not the case here. And I think this is another case where, in this circuit, this trust's practices 5 years after the fact need to be simply recognized for what they are. And frankly, I think this circuit needs to rein them in once again, as they did in White and in Fulkerson. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Thank you very much, counsel. The case is taken under advisement.